You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Around the NFL podcast is gonna lock it up.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes. Oh yeah, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Here well, we are.
We encountered an absolute disaster in this studio today. When we marched in.
Do you know what's funny? When I walked in and I saw glitter and confetti all over the studio, I didn't even have to know what it was about because I know Sheck had been texting and tweeting about his 13-3 Steelers prediction for about 7 months. And I figured that it probably must have come up and this was a celebration. And that's exactly what it was.
Absolutely. It involved, I mean, I came in a little early thinking, hey, let's prep the show. Let's get off to a quick start here. Let's be organized. And instead, they're trying to wrangle NFL media cleaning crews to come in and vacuum the floor. And I did hear
NFL media cleaning crews.
A friend of ours blame himself for the fiasco, because I guess what happened was they poured this glassy confetti on top of Sheck, which was painful. But it was none other than a man from Britain, NFL UK, Handsome Hank.
Interesting.
He is the culprit, according to his own words.
Well,
words.
It really starts with Damashek and, you know, this self-glorification about something absolutely no one could care about.
Will he throw a party when they are 14-4?
it's like throwing a party for winning your fantasy league that your friends aren't in.
I mean, it's quite the unlikely accomplishment that
Sheck will take
that means absolutely nothing in life.
And I do like the idea, and it's such a classic third floor executive move. And make no mistake, that is very much what Henry is at this stage of his career. Good for him, is to walk downstairs, pour some kerosene, light a match, and then take the first elevator back up. That's what happened in the studio today.
Yeah, we're making friends all over the place here.
We four, John. We will fight on. You know why we're going to fight on? Because this is wild card weekend, and you know what that means. This is the Crucible!
The Crucible!
This is when we separate the men from the boys, Wes.
This Crucible is my favorite bull of the whole bull season.
Yes, we have four games this weekend. We have four teams on bye. The top two seeds in each conference. But we got some bangers. And I just want a little note. Did a little research this morning. Did a little search. Because there are some, if you go in the desert, the people are saying they have a pretty strong feeling what they think is going to happen this weekend. There's some heavy, can I say favorites? Yeah, favorites is just a word. People that are favored to win by the football cognoscenti and the fans.
Right.
The home teams are all favored this weekend.
Yes.
You're not breaking any news.
A little home team buzz. If you're just curious, okay, so does that mean all the home teams are going to win? Well, history says perhaps not. Last year, all four home teams won Wild Card Weekend. The year before, do you guys remember that? Marron.
Did they all lose?
Four home teams lost in 2015. Three of four home teams won in 2014. Three of four home teams lost in 2013.
500 over the last 4 years.
Yep, and three of four won in 2012. So the last 5 years, do not pencil in these home teams. In only 1 year out of the last five did it go chalk. But maybe this year is a chalk year. It just looks like that, but who knows?
Well, yeah, a lot of those years the road teams, you know, had better records. Especially in the AFC. You know, I think a lot of people would be surprised if those teams, Titans or Bills, go win a game, but that's why you play them.
And the other exciting thing, this is a big weekend for the Around the NFL podcast. Some changes around here, and some of those changes have resulted in, yes, opportunity. Look, listen.
It's knocking.
It's knocking, baby.
Open the door. Let it in.
The Around the NFL podcast will be going to the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum this weekend for the Rams. Tilt against the defending conference champion Falcons, and Greg Rosenthal will be writing for NFL.com. He'll be
thank you very much here with NFL.com's Greg Rosenthal.
NFL.com's Greg Rosenthal.
So my favorite thing is when I saw that's Amber Theo Harris's voice, who's one of our great hosts on the network. She had heard through the grapevine on Twitter that her voice had been used in a drop, and she couldn't tell if it was like being used at her expense. And she was like, "What the hell's up with this drop? Are you guys making fun of me?"
Well, at this
like,
point, no. Drop's lost all context, and 95% of people listening don't even.
She still gets a tweet or two every time it's used in our show, and I think she's as confused as ever by whatever it is.
And I should make it clear that Amber is a very good sport about it, but she was definitely confused when it first came. Do we have any? We haven't heard any of these Rosenthal drops. Do we have any others, Erica, to share?
It's with NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
The Beatlemania one. I like that. You got another one, Erica?
Yeah, give me a second.
Yeah. There's Erica behind the glass, by the way. Mm. Lindsay out of town. Loose Cannon. She's getting ready for that Justin Timberlake halftime show.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
Erica knows every step to the Bye 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 dance, by the way.
Darren's Dance Grooves videotape. VHS. Back in the day.
Do you need a couple minutes? You want to
circle back? We have a lot of networks.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing a lot of .coms.
All right. That's fine. Network.
He's a big star now.
He is. Are you going to do network stuff in New Orleans?
No.
Yikes. All right. Anyway, Greg will be in the Superdome on Sunday. We'll be at the Coliseum on Saturday. So good things are happening for the show. And, of course, it's all possible because you guys listen to us. So thank you to the listeners. Now, it's time to get to the games. And why don't we go in chronological order? There's damn glitter all over me. What? I mean.
There's a shower in our facility. Maybe you head there after this.
You want to join me?
Totally inappropriate.
Saturday, we'll start with the number 5 seeded Tennessee Titans. They made the playoffs. How about that? They're in, and they're looking to win, and they're going to go to Kansas City to face the Chiefs. A tough matchup. The Chiefs, of course, I think they won their first playoff game in something like 25 years last year, the Chiefs, so they got that. A monkey off their back. Now they're trying to actually make a run. Well, they were trying last year.
Yeah. Didn't win a game last year. A couple years
ago. Was it a couple years ago it happened? It was. You're right. It was 2 years ago.
Oh, it cost Brian Hoyer his job.
Oh, that's right.
He cost himself his job, but yeah.
The 30-0 glory fest. Anyway, but now the Chiefs are playing really well, Wes. They started 5-0. They lost 6 of 7 and then won out 4 straight. And what version of the Chiefs is going to show up in January in the Crucible, Wes?
I would consider the way they play at home in that stadium, especially on defense, I think we're going to see the one from the third season. They had the first season, like you said, where they won. The second season in the middle where they lost. I think they went 1-6, and then they closed out the season in a flurry, playing well on offense. I think we're going to get a romp here. The Chiefs are playing really well.
It's amazing when you look at their last loss of the season was at the Meadowlands against the Jets. And we all know the Jets are not a good team. And Marcus Peters having a meltdown, throwing a penalty flag into the crowd, going back to the locker room, coming back out when the game was still in doubt without shoes, and they lose the game, and you're just like, the Chiefs are done. This team lost it. And we all counted the Chiefs out on our Pick'em show the following week. We all picked against them in their game against the Raiders. They won that game. They have not lost since. So they did survive that, and they're a better team for it, I think.
Marcus Peters is PFF's number one quarterback in the last 3 weeks. I mean, that Jets meltdown, and then he got a break after that. Maybe that helped. This defense has been a completely different defense. I remember watching some of those Chiefs games and thinking, okay, look, they are one of these teams that peaked way too hard in September, and they're not coming back. And it's quite remarkable to see that they are now playing on offense. They're averaging almost 29 points a game at the height of their powers. So they're a very dangerous team in the playoffs that I don't think a lot of people are talking about, because when you think of the Chiefs, it's hard to unlock what we thought about them for years on end.
I think that this is their best chance to make the Super Bowl under Andy Reid. Maybe not their best team necessarily. I don't know if it's that much better, but I just think the AFC is more open this year. If I'm a Chiefs fan, I like the matchup that they could be going to Foxborough. If they win this game, that is what is going to happen, and I think they like that matchup better than playing against the Steelers, who've had their numbers, and they're exciting to watch. I mean, if you just looked at the numbers and you took away the names, if you had said before the season that Alex Smith is going to have 26 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 4,000 yards, and 8 yards per attempt, and then you look at Kareem Hunt leading the league in rushing with a ton of receiving, and you look at what Tyreek Hill did, Tyreek Hill had 1,183 yards on only 105 targets, which is unbelievably efficient. I know he's not a conventional number one receiver, but for what he does for them, he is so effective. And then you have what was at least the most consistent pass-catching tight end in the league. Like, the Chiefs that are not fun to watch are gone. This is a fun team to watch.
They're totally different than the Chiefs we think about from a couple of years ago. I agree 100%. This is their best chance to get to the Super Bowl under Andy Reid. Mm. And if you made Tyreek Hill your flex option on the All-Pro team, it would not bother me one bit. I think he's been that important to this offense.
It's been like a series of in the draft acquiring stars, game-breaking stars on offense. And you know, we always thought of Alex Smith, and there's a reason for it, as this guy unfurling like worm burners and middle of the field passing game, but he's been a deep ball passer. I mean, where is he in the MVP race this year? I know it doesn't matter if you're not one or two, but I feel like even though we talk about him a lot, the Alex Smith campaign has gone a little bit under the radar.
Yeah, he's not going to get a vote probably, but it's his best season. I mean, he set a career high in all those stats that Greg just mentioned. He's a top five player in metrics and a lot of the key stats over any quarterback this season. And in terms of what he does, what he's best at, and this is a good stat from PFF, and the Titans defense, they can get to the quarterback. They had 43 sacks this year, which is top five in the league. Alex Smith leads all QBs in passer rating and accuracy rate when he's not under pressure. So if they keep him clean, if the offensive line does their job, Alex Smith is going to pick apart the Titans just like he's done to many teams this year.
He's kind of a one-read quarterback, and then he runs a little bit, not too different from Tyrod Taylor or Russell Wilson in some way, and certainly uses his feet on third down. Like, the Titans are not an easy team to run against. It's hard to really see the Titans winning this game. If they're going to do it, it's with turnovers. But then you look at the Chiefs, they've turned the ball over only 11 times all year. That's one of the fewest in NFL history. Like, they are it's such a great combination of big plays and being careful with the ball that they're going to need Adoree Jackson, for instance, to maybe make a play. Like, him versus Tyreek Hill is about the fastest matchup you can imagine possible in the NFL. Like, that should be fun to watch. And the Titans, we give them a lot of grief. They've played pretty well the last 2 weeks. I mean, the Rams game was a tight game, and they ended up taking care of business and beating the Jaguars in a game they have to win. They should get some credit for that.
They are the only playoff team of this entire field to get into the playoffs with a negative point differential, yardage differential, and turnover differential. 8 teams in 25 years have done that. They've all lost in the wild card round.
That's the AFC in 2017.
Greg, I think you're reaching.
What?
On this Titans have played well thing. They didn't play well on offense at all against the Jaguars.
They won the game, though. I'm just saying, we give the Jaguars a lot of credit. They beat the Jaguars.
And they lost to a 49ers team that went 6-10. I mean, that's a reach.
I'm just saying, the last 2 weeks, they played the Rams and the Jaguars, and those two games were pretty even, and we killed the Titans. Look, I don't think the Titans are going to win. In fact, I'm going to lock this game up. I'm just saying, if we want to give them any hope, it's Marcus Mariota having made big plays at the end of that game. You know, you had Rishard Matthews a couple weeks ago saying, you know, just let Marcus call the plays, play hurry up the whole time. They have done that a little more over the last few weeks. And you hear Delanie Walker say, you know, sometimes you just got to overcome coaching. And that was Mariota at the end of that game, just kind of taking it into his hands in terms of the running game. If he's as good as we used to think he is, maybe he can just have a great game against a, you know, a defense that's not
great.
You
have no DeMarco Murray. Derrick Henry last week had, what, 51 yards off 28 attempts?
Yeah.
This is just not a team that imposes its will on the ground.
This running game has been dead in the water in the first quarter of almost every game they've played. If you're looking for hope from the Titans, it's not on the offensive side of the ball. They are a broken offense, and they have been all year. It's on defense, where in the second half of the season, they allow 8 fewer points per game than they did in the first half of the season. They're top 5 in every rush defense category,
yep.
And they sack teams 4 times a game in the second half of the season.
All right, Wes. Each of us are going to have a chance to surface this. And since you haven't brought it up yet, I'm going to set you up here.
Mm.
What is one big freaking question connected to this game?
Which is more criminally underrated? That Titans defense that I just talked about with all those stats in the second half of the season, or Alex Smith, who has a phenomenal year, finishes first in passer rating, first in touchdown to interception ratio, first in deep passing, first in deep accuracy, second in yards per attempt, and has it all mansplained away by analysts as he doesn't have
mansplained.
He doesn't have to do that much in that offense. Bull crap. He had a great, great season, a top 5 MVP season. Who is more criminally underrated, Alex Smith or the Titans defense?
Alex Smith, because I think most people look at the Titans defense and don't really have much of a takeaway at all half the time. And so in that sense, they probably are not seeing the positives. But Alex Smith, people go out on a limb to destroy the guy. I've been super critical of him in the years past, but this is a different
season. Well, and he was a nightmare for 3 or 4 weeks, a bigger nightmare than anyone that would be in the MVP race had for 3 or 4 weeks.
No, he wasn't a bigger nightmare than Russell Wilson.
If you watch him play to play in terms of some throws that he's missed and some of the dropped interceptions, I don't think he's been as on fire. Even down the stretch, he's playing well, but I don't think he's been as on fire as the numbers say.
Okay, but
that's what I'm saying. Everyone picks at Alex Smith, but they don't pick at Russell Wilson. They don't pick at Tom Brady.
That's fair. Absolutely.
Everyone's looking for reasons why Alex Smith shouldn't be trusted.
And we always laughed at the concept that Jay Cutler could grow or evolve as a quarterback this season and others because he's of a certain age. Alex Smith did grow and evolve this season.
He's a totally different quarterback this year.
That's unusual.
What a story it would be if we had Andy Reid trying to win his first Super Bowl in Minnesota and Alex Smith trying to win a Super Bowl, like the Super Bowl that Kaepernick couldn't get, you know, in San Francisco, at the moment where this guy's coming up behind him, it would be a lot of fun. I mean, the Patriots had lost, but it would
do not sleep on Alex Smith. You're making a mistake, because even before he had this this elevation to his game, to me, like, probably not that I have a hardcore ranking in my mind, but two of the most memorable playoff performances by a quarterback in this decade, Alex Smith, when he beat the top-seeded, I believe they were, Saints, who were defending Super Bowl champions, at Candlestick on that pass to Vernon Davis. He had 4 touchdowns in that game, threw for 300 yards. And then he absolutely torched the Colts in the 2013 playoffs. They ended up blowing the game in crushing fashion, losing 45-44, and Andrew Luck played out of his mind. But if Dwayne Bowe doesn't drop a deep sideline pass late in that game, he might have the greatest statistical playoff game of all time. I think he ran for 100 yards, close to a touchdown, threw 4 touchdowns. This guy, Alex Smith, is not afraid to play in January, and that's why I'm also locking up the Chiefs. I love him in this matchup.
This definitely leads to the Chiefs losing 17-14 on a last.
There's
second.
A lot of
no chance.
There's a lot of heavy favorites, and there's every team is a heavy favorite at home. This is the one game that I truly expect to be a blowout, which will probably be wrong. I mean, I'll be happy, and I'm sorry, Titans fans, but you have to feel a little weird. You got to enjoy this moment, but there has to be a part of you that wouldn't mind Mike Mularkey losing his job, because I'm tired of watching this running game. I'm tired of watching Eric Decker on this team. I'm tired of watching just a passing game that doesn't take advantage of the talent that's there. It should be a passing team, and they can't get it done.
You're kind of funny, Greg, with the head coaches stuff, because you're always a little bit uncomfortable when we play hot butts and talk about who could get fired. But lately, you, Mike McCarthy, and John Fox, you want these guys to be thrown in a river.
You shrugged those concerns off. You are out for blood.
Mark's the one who throws them in a bag in a river. You know, people contain multitudes.
Greg's got a handful of whipping boys.
He does. All right.
I'm sick of watching this malarkey. Give me a break.
The late Saturday night game.
It's been like 20 years now he's been a part of our lives.
It is time to talk about, yes, the team of ATL.
Team of ATL.
The number 3 seed, the NFC West champion, Los Angeles Rams, the hometown Rams. And they increased the capacity of the Coliseum, from what I understand. Hopefully they can get about 80K in there. I don't know. We'll see if they do it.
Good seats still available. So if you're in the L.A. area, go to a playoff game. This is the best game of the weekend. Tons of tickets are still out there. It's crazy.
Nice pitch, Greg. The Falcons coming into town, 10-6, an up-and-down season, but they closed out quietly, I would say, winning 6 of 8 to lock in that number 6 seed. So they're in. They have a chance now, Mark Sessler, to rewrite a wrong in their team history, the worst loss in the history of the playoffs, I like to think, in Super Bowl 52 against the Patriots. Calm down, Erica. I know you just have it. You got stars in your eyes, daydreaming.
I'm still a little, like, nervous about the Chiefs, you know, beating the Titans. And then we play. Like, that's, like, what's on my mind right now.
Erica mentioned this the other day. You think the Patriots are vulnerable. You lack your typical steely confidence about New England.
Oh my God, that was off the record, Mark. I am not as confident as all you guys are, but I'm also superstitious, so I'm not going
to
just be
cut to the Amy Schumer wine drinking.
Yeah, I'm not confident at all. I don't think they're making the Super Bowl.
We know that, but you've
been saying that for 10 years since we've known you.
That's not true. Some years I've been wrong about it the other way.
Weather-worn narrative.
Yeah, so the Falcons have a chance now to make peace with themselves in the playoffs, but they got a tough assignment, Mark. A very, very good Rams team playing in their building.
Very tough assignment, and you wanted one big takeaway for these games, and for me...
No, I didn't ask for that.
What was the
Not
term?
Not a takeaway.
One question.
One big freaking question.
One big freaking question is there a game that we'll encounter all season that shows us how...
The look.
Every podcast.
The look.
Are we good? Are we good? Are we done, Erica?
The loose cannon Sessler dynamic sometimes approaches the Sessler TD dynamic, where there's just a lot of heat and electricity.
Well, I respect Erica, so that's it's a little different. No, I like TD too. Look, I guess I just look at this game and I cannot find. I'm just going to talk through it. I'm just going to talk. Enough.
Now you got him.
Enough.
He just threw his phone. That's
someone
gonna,
else go.
That's only going to hurt you.
One big freaking question, Mark. All right.
My one big freaking question.
Don't do it, Erica.
Is honestly, I cannot find a game all season that shows us how transformative one off season is to the next. Because this Rams team is what we looked at last year with the Falcons and said they have suddenly peaked going into the playoffs and could take anyone out. Their offense is so potent. And a year ago, the Rams were an utter laughingstock. And you couldn't find anyone to do anything other than point fingers at Jeff Fisher and that front office and say you've utterly failed in a way that few NFL teams do. By sticking in the mud with that coach and that whole program for 2 or 3 years longer than you do. Now we have players on the Rams talking about Sean McVay. Mike Silver wrote this great piece where he got everyone to talk. And Andrew Whitworth, who's 4 years older than McVay, said that anyone who spends 5 minutes with him comes away from it and goes, that kid is not 31. And he pointed to multiple Hall of Fame players and said that when you meet an Anthony Munoz, a Jonathan Ogden, you just know, forget their background, their age, wherever they are, that they have something special that makes them set apart in the NFL circle forever. And he meant, that's Sean McVay, he said. And I cannot fathom where we'll be with this guy half a decade from now.
Don't get mad at me, but that wasn't a question.
Well, I wasn't done.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not going to finish. But I'm locking it up! Rams are going to whip this team.
Wow.
Team of ATL.
That was quite eventful, the last couple minutes on the show.
The Crucible.
That's it. That's what it's like at the Crucible. But I would love to know, honestly, Mark, what is the question?
It's passionate inside the Crucible.
I guess I was going to ask, can you find a game that shows how much teams change over the course of one season? Can you point to one game in the playoffs or all year? This is the one that shows me how far two teams have come. And the Rams haven't, the Falcons haven't bottomed out in a negative way. But Dan Quinn was everyone's man of the hour a year ago. And now we're questioning if this coaching staff has done a good enough job with this team.
That's the only thing I'm thinking about. And McVay is basically, it makes me think of, I remember when I, way back in the day when I was working at a newspaper and they had just come out with, or what was that movie, the Eminem movie where he's in the rap battle?
Eight Mile.
And
I like that you turned to me for pop culture questions.
Yeah, well, I know that's kind of in, you were in your 30s at that point. You were still kind of in the zone.
Yeah, well, that little whippersnapper, Eminem, with the rappity rap, right?
8 Mile. So Eminem had been on a string of unprecedented success in hip-hop for about 4 or 5 years. And this guy that I worked with, Jeff, he said to me, oh, Eminem's the new Elvis. And nobody laughed him out of the room because he was that, like, popular and crossed all genres.
Now
it doesn't age so well. I guess that's what I think when I think of McVay, that he's at the top of the mountain and we're saying he's the greatest coach that's ever lived. Let's see what he looks like in 10 years. Dan Quinn, the bloom came off the rose in 1 year.
It's a great point because the Rams next year could lose one or two people and be scoring 17 points a game.
But all that said, let me just say, I'm not taking anything away from McVay. Yeah. I think he's in the sweet spot right now. He's on a roll. He's feeling himself. He loves the team. The team loves him. And that makes them super dangerous.
I think, though, this is the most dangerous matchup they could have had in the NFC. I kind of feel like the Rams are my Super Bowl pick at
this
point.
Team of ATL, baby.
If I feel like if they could also lose this week. I feel like if they get past this week, they're gonna go. But this is a dangerous matchup, not just because the Falcons have experience and motivation and all that, but because their defense is playing much better over the last half of the season and really the last 2 weeks. And when you watch the Rams, they're always much faster than their opponents. This week, they're not going to be faster. That is a fast Falcons defense who has played well the last couple weeks. If you look what they did against Kamara, what they did against McCaffrey, they've done a good job shutting down running backs for the most part in the passing game. Like, they are a fast group that I think if Grady Jarrett has the type of game that he's had a few times this season, including last week, can get Jared Goff off the spot, and his numbers when he is pressured are not good. It's one of the biggest gaps in any quarterback in the league in terms of when he is pressured and when he isn't. And I think that's a recipe to keep this game close. I think it's going to be a great game.
You're right about Goff and the pressure, but what's so great about McVay and what does make him a coach that I'm not worried about in 10 years because he is so unique, you don't hear comparisons to Bill Walsh very often. But when you watch the Falcons last year and the Rams this year, like Mark said, it's the Rams this year who have wide open wide receivers,
yep,
huge throwing windows, and defined reads for Jared Goff that Matt Ryan doesn't have this year because he misses Kyle Shanahan. And that's the difference between these two offenses right now. The Falcons would scare me a lot more if this game was in the Dome, if they were playing at home, because their run and chase linebackers, their safeties are so much faster on that Dome and the fast turf there. They average about 6 points more allowed on the road than they do at home.
If you're going to come up with a few people to help slow down Gurley, and I think if you can slow down Gurley, then you have a chance. Like, that's the offense. It would be Deion Jones to me. It'd be Devondre Campbell. It'd be Keanu Neal. Like, these are guys that can make an impact.
I feel like even if you slow the Rams down, they're still going to score 24 points. Yeah, you're going to have to find a way. The Falcons, they look fantastic for a 5 or 6 minute drive, and then they go utterly to sleep.
Like, and nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. If Todd Gurley, for whatever reason, had to exit the lineup, is Jared Goff good enough to keep this team afloat?
No.
In a game, in a crucible scenario?
Sean McVay is, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of getting the receivers open, and the Falcons secondary has played well lately. It's been the last few weeks, but I trust McVay. He schemes very well, not just before the game, but in terms of adjusting inside the game.
I love this game. I agree. I think this is going to be the game of the week. I see the Rams winning in a close game, but I could definitely see it going the other way, and that's.
Other way for the Falcons.
I could see it going to the Falcons, too, because they really did, despite being disappointing, despite the fact that
This is huge for you. You haven't given the Falcons credit all year.
I'm going to give it to them a little credit right now because they got to 10 wins. They found their way into the playoffs.
That was a playoff game last week. Yeah. And I think that kind of matters. And they showed up in what was a playoff game.
I locked up against them for that very reason. I just didn't think they had the juice in them. And now it's almost like they take that confidence in. They have to be feeling good about themselves. I find it interesting still, and I know this has been talked about a lot, but our research notes noted that the Matt Ryan to Julio Jones connection – 86.9 passer rating, the league average exactly. How does that happen? How do they change that? Because I think their playoff hopes ride on them rediscovering their mojo. It's been over 100, that passer rating combo, for every other year since Jones came into the league. Just like Larry Fitzgerald and Kurt Warner rode a wave into the Super Bowl all those years ago, I think Jones and Matt Ryan need to get hot. I don't know if it's going to happen, though, because we haven't seen it for 17 weeks.
There's a lot of balls that go off of Julio Jones' fingers these days.
And well, they're not all drops. He had a ton of drops this year.
They're not all drops. There's a lot of throws into tight coverage that were huge open windows last year.
The reason I like the Rams better, obviously, in this game, but is that they're so balanced. There's no team in Football Outsiders history, I believe, that they've measured that was top six in offense, defense, and special teams. Like the Rams' defense has been under the radar, but Wade Phillips has done as good a job with this group as he's ever done just about in terms of turning them around. And it's a lot of the underrated guys. Aaron Donald, I think, should win Defensive Player of the Year. But Michael Brockers, I know you tweeted about him earlier this week, Wes, has been really good disrupting plays up the middle. LaMarcus Joyner, I had someone ask me for, you know, they had an all-pro ballot, and I was trying to come up with the safeties.
They shared their all-pro ballot with you?
Well, they said, hey, do you have any suggestions? Yeah. Do you have any suggestions?
Are we cool with that?
I think that what should be encouraged.
Yeah.
That if you're
I wasn't the only one. He sent it to three or four people, and he was kind of just trying to get a
feel. Was it Tom Curran?
It was Tommy. You know,
I think that's great. It's a beat writer who he has to watch so much film on the Patriots and check in with his own.
No, I think
sources.
It's fine. I'm just kidding.
I mean, I'm just like, that's cool to me. Like, you don't have a chance to watch all the film, so ask guys who do watch.
I threw in LaMarcus Joyner as the nickel safety. You can add like a fifth defensive back, and that's how good I think LaMarcus Joyner has been this year. You have Josh Johnson, who's been a great rookie safety. It's like they are deep on that defense.
A team of ATL. And by the way, this is the son of bum, Wade Phillips, first time back in the Crucible since
the Crucible.
Celebrating in Santa Clara.
Hmm.
Don't sleep on the son of bum cooking up something. That's flummox, true. Matty Ryan in the big spot.
It's a good call.
All right. Let's move on. That's a great game.
Do we all pick it? I guess we're all picking.
Do we all have you locked up the Rams, Mark, correct?
That would mean I've picked the Rams.
You, Wes, we haven't heard your exact pick.
Well, I look at the difference in coaching last December. These Falcons went into L.A. and ended Jeff Fisher's coaching tenure there with the most embarrassing loss of the season.
Mm.
And now the Rams are the better team, and I expect them to win 30-24 Rams.
I like it. All right, moving on to Sunday. The early affair is a matchup between the Buffalo Bills. Of course, we're kind of a heartwarming story at the end of the regular season when they won in Week 17 and then got that miracle touchdown from Andy Dalton. Wes, I was wondering why you were so mad. I saw that cost you three sandwiches.
It did. I'm not happy about that at all.
Because you would have been 11-5
it would have been
for the regular season. That one hurts, and I get it totally.
Yeah, that was the butterfly effect. People don't understand how much that one Andy Dalton pass.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a $170,000 pass, as Greg said, for the underserved children of the Andy Dalton building.
So the Bills are a great story, but maybe the story doesn't have a great ending because LeSean McCoy got carted off in that Week 17 win against Miami. He hadn't practiced all week. I read this morning that he came out for the stretching exercises with the Bills, this morning being Thursday, and then left the field. I don't know if it's because it was barking or that was just always the plan.
He did not practice. He did do the stretching, but yeah, that's
it. I would imagine McCoy will give it a shot, considering he's never won a playoff game in his career, and he's probably amped up for this game. But at the end of the day, the Jaguars are the better team in a lot of phases. But I will ask my one big freaking question to get this game conversation going, guys. And it's a simple one. And there's no reason to sugarcoat it or try to gussy it up because it's the only thing that matters in this game to me. Which version of Blake Bortles shows up in the Crucible? Because that's all that matters.
Mm.
That's it. And everyone's disrespecting Blake. Jadeveon Clowney calling him trash, you know, for no reason. Just decided to go to the press with that.
After he trashed the Texans.
Yeah, Jarrell Casey, I believe, went out of his way to say that Blake Bortles will choke if you give him the chance. Kevin Clark over at The Ringer wrote a good piece about why does everyone think it's, you know, why is it okay to just constantly rip on Blake Bortles? And Blake Bortles' reaction to it all is a shrug of the shoulders, even when his old dad has thought about, like, going after people that rip him. I don't know if that makes me more confident in Blake, that he doesn't even seem to process that people think he's terrible. But anyway, that's the key, Mark. Is Blake Bortles going to throw this game away? Because if he just plays at a league average, a replacement level, they're going to take care of this Bills team, right?
I think so, and I think that you got to show me what on Buffalo is going to generate that kind of performance by the Jaguars in general. Because a lot of times it's not just Blake. Blake Bortles makes some bad throws, but a lot of times when they're trying to play from behind or the running game isn't powerful the way it was in some situations, then the mistakes occur. I just don't see Buffalo as a team that can impose its will on really anyone in this playoff group. I like the story of the Bills. I love their fans. It's all a good thing. But the Jaguars have also, yes, they've had bad Blake Bortles games. They've also had kind of contests where they've dropped bombs on people, scoring 35, 40 points. I see this as a game where Jacksonville is going to basically also say this is our first home playoff game in ages, and we have pride in that, and we're going to show up. I don't think it's a no-show for Blake Bortles and the Jaguars.
I think the version we're going to get is the one where all he has to do is turn around and hand it off and cruise to victory. Because this is not just the most lopsided matchup in this year's playoffs. It's one of the most lopsided matchups I've ever seen in the wild card round. What do the Bills do well? Their secondary is really good. Other than that, they've got an injured running back who had 1,000 more yards for scrimmage than any other
player. Best player. Easy.
1,000 more yards for scrimmage than any other player on their team. And he's playing injured. I think the Bills are 31 in run defense since they traded away Marcell Dareus. I think the Jaguars are going to run it down their throats all game.
See, I don't think it's necessarily that one-sided. I don't have a strong feel, but if I had to pick one team that
how is it not lopsided?
The Jaguars are inconsistent enough that they can get swept by the Titans. Like, so any team that can get swept by the Titans, it's not the most lopsided.
Talking about two
games. I'm talking about the week before also that the Jaguars played. They're a fine team when they played better competition throughout the year. Sometimes they play well. Sometimes, you know, it's a toss-up. When you watch Bortles last week, one of the problems is the offensive line, and he, in a way, hasn't gotten enough credit for playing behind a really bad offensive line. Throwing to two rookie receivers. His best receiver, Marquise Lee, has not practiced yet this week. He might try to play on Sunday. He's throwing to an undrafted rookie in Keelan Cole, and he's throwing to Dede Westbrook, who basically barfed on himself last week, but with an alligator arms miss and a drop in the end zone really hurt their chances. So you're counting on two rookie receivers and you're counting on Blake Bortles against a defense. If they do one thing well, it's keep it in front of you, make you work down the field, make you execute, and you have a really good secondary. Can Blake Bortles go up and down the field and do that against
a
well coached? They haven't run the ball particularly well either. They're not a great offense.
Dede Westbrook has been, he's been great,
but he's had a rough couple of weeks.
Rappaport thinks Marquise Lee is coming back, and they also have Cam Robinson, the left tackle back. The havoc was caused working with no Cam Robinson last week.
Are you bringing back Barf?
He barfed all over him.
But you're bringing it back. I like it.
I didn't know it was gone. That's the case. A better quarterback on Buffalo and a better coach.
Here's the counter.
I don't think there is a case.
Leonard Fournette has not been playing extremely well in the second half of the season.
And they have one of the deepest backfields in the NFL. Turn to Chris Ivory or T.J. Yeldon.
He was a healthy scratch last week.
So against a horrible run defense.
What about the Doug Marrone factor? Does that matter at all if you're Buffalo? Mm. We didn't even bring it up on our last podcast. You have Doug Marrone going against the team that he ditched.
Yeah, it is a revenge game for somebody, I guess.
Not for Doug Marrone.
It's a revenge game for the Bills. I mean, their ownership was talking trash on Doug Marrone just this offseason.
This is the playoffs. Weird things happen. And, Wes, you've hit on this a lot this season, that the Jaguars are a great team as long as they don't fall behind. And I don't expect them to, but what if a special teams play happens? What if Bortles does throw a pick six, something bad happens, a fumble, and they're behind and they have to throw the ball? I just think the Jaguars aren't good enough on offense to be a huge favorite over anybody.
I expect them to win, to be clear. It's just life is unpredictable. Football is unpredictable. And this is one where I could see them coming up because I do like the coaches better. I think Sean McDermott's really good in game. I think Tyrod Taylor is a much more trustworthy quarterback. He's a game manager. He's very Alex Smith like in terms of he avoids mistakes. He doesn't go for it too much, but he's a great running quarterback on third downs. And in a low scoring game, I kind of trust him more than Bortles.
If you could draw up a team that the Jaguars would most want to play against and not worry about falling it behind, it would be the Buffalo Bills with an injured LeSean McCoy. They don't scare anyone.
Right, but do the Titans? I mean, they lost the game where they gave up 230 yards last week, so they're capable of
the
doing
Titans
that.
The Titans play good run defense. The Bills are a pushover against the run. I mean, I just don't see any – I don't know.
This is a lot more
– we're just ignoring Jacksonville's defense, too. It's not been the greatest 14 days for Jacksonville's defense, but that's
great
the best
week,
unit
yeah.
in this
by far. And that's why they should win. They're second in the league in interceptions. The Bills are sixth, so it's a game that you would expect to see some turnovers. But you're right. The Jaguars' defense is so much better than anything else in this game. Logically, that's why they're huge favorites. I mean, they are a monster. They're more than a touchdown favorite in this game, which is saying
a lot. This game's a lot more fun
for a team that's lost two
straight. LeSean McCoy doesn't get carted off last week. Then you can really kind of maybe talk yourself into this game and maybe an upset. But let's pick this game. I'll put it out there, 20-6 Jaguars. I just don't think the Bills will move the ball, and that's the most likely outcome. And Bortles won't be given a chance to beat them.
I'll go 24-12, Jacksonville. Otherwise, you have Buffalo going to New England.
Yes, we do not want that.
Which, that's the thing. If you want this storyline, and that's fine. Listen, Buffalo has a bright future, but you put Buffalo in New England next week, come on.
The story, the fairy tale.
I don't even know if they have a bright future.
The Bills just getting to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Football gods, do not send me the Bills going to Foxborough next week. I don't want any of that.
They have a good coach. I think they have a good coach, Greg. That's what I mean.
Yeah, you're gonna have to have the best Bills game that we've seen in a while. But this was a team that went to Kansas City, won a game. They somehow had Jordan Poyer win Defensive Player of the Month. They've got a good secondary. I'll go Jacksonville, not really having a good offensive performance, 19-10.
Wes?
Let's see.
600-0.
I mean, I get that the Bills are a feel-good story. That's great. I'm glad they're here. That's fine. Everybody is going way overboard on how good this team is or what they are as a team. I could not wait to lock this game up, which I'm doing because it's the easiest lockup I've chosen this year. 34-9, Jaguars over Bills. Mm.
All right, there you go. One last thing before we move on. The Bills' last playoff game was, I believe, January 6th, 2000, ending that long drought this week.
The Music City Miracle game.
Yes.
The 8th, but yes.
And January 8th. And by the way, NFL Network, throw these Bills fans a bone. You're putting the Music City Miracle game on today, sending them bad juju, but the Titans are playing too, so I get it. Mark, where were you on January 8th, 2000? What was Mark Sessler's life like at that point?
I basically had moved back to my parents' house, been there for about 72 hours. I had a job as a copy editor at the Boulder Daily Camera in Boulder, Colorado, and this was I was going to be there alone when this menacing Y2K event was supposed to happen, and I said, no, I'm not doing that. So I left the job, and I left Colorado. I'm not going to be the only person in the newsroom when all technology blows up.
Wait, you left because of the Y2K threat?
I mean,
wow.
I had a blooming relationship with a girlfriend starting to happen on the East Coast, so things aligned a little bit. But yeah, I wanted nothing to do with this task. And I was home. I watched the Music City Miracle with my dad, and we had a great time watching it. But there were always lingering questions, even hours later, of what are you doing here? You're like 26. Like, what is your plan? And, that came up roughly every year with whenever I'd come home for the holidays.
So. What about you, Wes?
I had some Y2K stuff going on. I was working at the law firm, living a pretty fairly easy life, just reading, like, H.L. Mencken and Hunter S. Thompson while I was supposed to be working. But the Y2K scare, I had to physically go in and change our retention dates on all our files because they were all due to expire on 2000, like 1-1-2000.
Right,
so I had to clear all that. But I would say around this time, I was absolutely mortified by a fiance who had engaged herself to me and threw like a holiday shower party in which my family members would buy us like Christmas ornaments and stuff.
Oh, no.
So I for like this few weeks stretch around Christmas and New Year's, I was trying to find a way to disengage, extricate myself from the situation. And how could I do this before like the wedding actually happens? That was what I was going
to do. And you got out.
Wow.
Yeah, I disengaged.
You survived this. You're going to survive the big C. You're a survivor, Wes.
Big C was a little bit tougher of a battle.
I don't know, man. That sounds like a tough situation.
I was ensnarled, yes.
2000, I was 19. I was trying to figure out my stuff.
Humble brag.
I had spent New Year's Eve when the Y2K ball dropped in Boston, and a friend of ours fell through a frozen pond and almost died.
Oh.
But she survived. Shouts to Michelle for surviving that.
Survivor.
Huh. I was taking a winter course, and I had like a first kind of real girlfriend, this girl that listened to the Magnolia soundtrack all the time at this stage because that movie came out the prior month.
Amy Mann.
Yeah, a lot of Amy Mann.
Great.
Good soundtrack, great movie. And I discovered classic rock around that time. I was getting into a lot of Springsteen.
How did it take you
Tom
that
Petty,
long?
It seems
a little
Beatles,
late.
The Beatles, the Stones. I remember I was gobbling up a lot of the classics musically at that time. That's where I was.
Mm.
It didn't work out with Dana, but nice girl.
At least Michelle lived.
Yeah.
She did it. She fell through the pond, literally, and then...
That's scary.
It was 11 o'clock at night in the middle of a park in Boston, and easily could have just... died in one of the worst ways to die. That's top 10.
Well, fall through the ice. You think about that, then you can't find the hole, and then suddenly you're 15 yards out, you're gone.
Hypothermia is a
Yeah, and she had to walk back
to
an apartment.
Yeah, that's a nightmare. I don't even like thinking about that.
Yeah, anyway, she lived. Another survivor.
Mr. Deeds, the black foot that crushes the ice to get her out. Remember that scene? He like takes out his black foot that has no feeling.
Kind of a millennial ref to drop Mr. Deeds, the Adam Sandler vehicle. Yeah,
Mr. Deeds.
I cashed out on Sandler around that stupid football movie.
Waterboy.
Yeah, that's about when I checked out.
A couple years before. It was
Right
before that. I had just gotten out on Sandler.
My memory is generally very foggy, but I do remember exactly where I was.
Greg wasn't alive. He was ascension in
no,
early 2000.
I remember exactly where I was making fun of the ESPN broadcast of this game. It was the worst crew in the world. Mike Patrick, Joe Theismann. And who else?
Paul McGuire. You want to talk about a guy? Here's a guy.
Right. And
what was happening in your life?
I was in Atlanta.
That is Greg's life. His Twitter bio says it all. Football.
No, that was probably the least into football I ever was because it was junior year of school. I had come back a little early. I think we did New Year's in Miami. We had driven to Atlanta to see a friend. I was with my friend Anthony, who I did a podcast with.
Tony Jeselnik.
GVP. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, not a lot of sobriety. I feel like there was a lot of drugs in the mix. Only time in Atlanta. But I remember
what kinds of drugs?
All sorts. Who knows?
Well, you mentioned on our last show what kind of drugs.
But, yeah, we were visiting a friend we had made from the summer. But I remember it snowed there, which is rare in Atlanta. And when we left the next day, I've never felt quite so stupid as I realized I had gone the wrong way back to New Orleans when we got close to the state line for South Carolina. And I was like, wait a second.
It's like four states away.
No, it's one state. It's right there. It's pretty close to Atlanta, relatively.
In Louisiana?
I was headed north out of Georgia instead of headed west. We were sitting there, and I'd like to think I was sober while driving, but I don't even know there. And I looked, and I said South Carolina. I said, well, this is a problem. We're going the wrong way here. We got to get this thing turned around.
Maybe the reason we claim that Greg has no memories under a certain age is that he's changed an identity to shake what seems like a hardcore drug-addled, maybe criminal past.
It's a narcotic element.
I was sober driving. Yeah, I was fine.
Since you mentioned it, it actually was 10 years and one day later from the January 8th, 2000, the worst announcing setup ever in my opinion, maybe you guys remember it. I remember it, obviously, because it's the Jets. But the 2009 wild card playoffs against the Bengals, the NBC had to just put together a group that had never done a game, just the way the schedule felt. So they had Tom Hammond, Joe Theismann, and Joe Gibbs broken out of mothballs, and Tiki Barber on the sideline. And there were actual stories written about how poor their announcing was.
I remember that. Well, that's neither here nor there. Gibbs got a lot of heat.
What's the common denominator with those two broadcast groups? Joe Theismann.
Theismann, there he is. All right.
By the way, I remember that Jets game. That was like the first of the Marvin Lewis era losses in the playoffs.
It was. The kicker.
Sean Green hit a big.
Shawnee ripped up the Bengals, and your kicker missed a bunch of kicks.
Didn't they lose back-to-back to them?
Yes, the Jets shut him out in Week 17 when it didn't matter.
Was that the news?
The news, yep. The news missed, I think.
And just a postscript for Debbie Rosenthal, my mom, who's probably listening. Yeah, I was definitely sober driving.
She is horrified. There's no – you know, the cat's out of the bag.
Deb, in the words of Goodwill Hunting, it's not your fault. You can only control what you can control. All right. Last game, Sunday. The Carolina Panthers traveling to NOLA. Oh, yeah. Greg's going to be there. The Saints and the Panthers, two 11-5 teams. The Saints won the division, so they get the home game. And New Orleans, Greg, defeated the Panthers twice in the regular season. They got to make it a hat trick.
Both times it was convincing. Both times Alvin Kamara played great. Drew Brees played terrific in both games. That was the last game that I was at was Panthers-Saints. That was a game where Cam Newton in the passing game was not very effective. And so I'll start with my question, which is very similar to yours, but I'm not creative enough to pivot. Which Cam Newton's going to show up? Because we've seen Cam Newton.
This is your one big freaking question.
This is my one big freaking question.
Let's Brandon, right?
It's easy to just remember last week, and really the last 2 weeks of Cam Newton being very scattershot, but you don't have to go back far to see Cam Newton play absolutely fantastic against the Minnesota Vikings. 31 points against the Vikings. Have one of his best games, probably I would say the best game of the season, just 3 weeks ago against the Packers when they put up 31 points. Which Cam Newton shows up? Because if it's the bad Cam Newton, they got no shot.
I just don't like what's around him right now, especially in the passing game. You've lost all your speed. You're whipping the ball downfield to Devin Funchess and who else at this point?
Greg Olsen, dad runner Greg Olsen.
They are up 75 points to the Saints in two games this season. So if it follows that script, you're going to have to hang with the Saints. And this Panthers team, if we're going to give the Falcons credit for showing up last week and knocking Carolina out, the Panthers had a chance to win their division and would have had they done the same to the Falcons. And it was the flattest game they've had all year.
I was disappointed. I was surprised. And I feel like the Saints are so well set up for a deep playoff run and especially to get out of this first round. They're such a good team. They're a well-balanced team. We know all about the running game and how they have two 1,500-yard guys. But Drew Brees, what he's been able to do this year, they asked him to do less, but he became more efficient than ever. Still a stud. Don't pay attention to the fact that he dropped to 24 touchdowns and less than 5,000 yards passing. He was still Drew Brees, and then he got the defense with those playmakers, Cam Jordan, Marshawn Lattimore. They had such a great offseason, and I think they're a well-rounded team like the Rams. Could be a collision course there. And I thought about locking this game up. I felt that good about them. But the Saints seem like they're set up well, and the Panthers, I don't know. I don't know about the Panthers.
I don't know how anyone could answer Greg's question confidently. Because there are weeks when Cam Newton looks like the 2015 MVP Cam Newton, and there are weeks where he looks like the guy who showed up in the Ryan Lindley playoff game, and his body turns into a corkscrew when he throws the ball. He has no mechanics.
They're so limited.
Yeah.
You never know from week to week whether his mechanics are going to make him throw everything too high and off the mark or whether he's going to be fine. So I have no confidence in my ability to predict which Cam Newton will show up.
Only coin flip.
Only DeShone Kizer has a worst QB rating on third down than Cam Newton, and they're going to face some third downs. Marshawn Lattimore didn't play in either Saints-Panthers game.
Right, although in this game it's almost like, Lattimore will shut down Funchess most likely, and that'll be big for the Saints, but it's almost like he's wasted because they don't even have any receivers in particular. Funchess is going to be their guy. They're such a slow passing attack. This was supposed to be the year, remember, that they didn't have Cam Newton run as much. He ended up running 49 more times. for twice as many much yardage as he did a year ago. But I also don't just chalk this one up to a Saints win. A, they're division opponents who know each other well. And B, the Saints haven't been that good. They lost to the Bucs last week. They were outplayed by the Bucs last week. They're 3-3 over the last 6 weeks. They haven't topped 100 yards. They've rushed for over 100 yards once out of the last 4 weeks. Kind of the team that everyone got all excited about in New Orleans. Maybe they can get it back going for the playoffs, but it hasn't really been around for 6 weeks. They haven't been that good of a defense. The running game, at least just for the last month, has been a little erratic. I think that's really on the blocking, and they hope that Teron Armstead, their left tackle, will be back in this game, and that'll definitely help. But they haven't really run. It's been more Drew Brees making plays, kind of old school, the last few weeks that's really gotten them through.
I would counter by saying, to me, in the two games I saw between these two teams,
yep,
the Saints clearly have the Panthers' number.
Yep.
The Panthers have given up 120 yards on the ground only twice all year. Both times were to the Saints.
Kamara thrashed them.
Controlled the games from the outset.
He made Kuechly and Davis, especially Davis, but even Kuechly had a pretty bad game in New Orleans. Like, he just made Thomas Davis look old. That's tough to do.
I don't know how the Saints are going to travel if they get out of this game and if you send them on the road. But at home, I like them a lot. And Drew Brees, for the record, as you might expect, because he always seems to play well in the playoffs, has been awesome at the Superdome in the playoffs. Has won all four games, 10 touchdowns, no interceptions, pass rating of 117. I just don't see them scoring less than 30 points in this game. And I don't know, with Cam Newton being such a scattershot guy, Wes is right. Maybe the 2015 Cam shows up, and it's not impossible that happens. But you really need – you have to kind of hit on blackjack, I think, to beat the
Saints. Missing five starters on defense to where they were at the start of the season. Six if you wanted to count Delvin Bro. So it is not –
yeah, you're not going to get the 2015 Panthers defense, which has given up this year 24-plus points, I think, eight times. It's like this is not – if you don't watch – if you just sign up for the playoffs, you don't even watch the Panthers, you'd think, oh, they have a great defense, and it's the same thing as before. It's not the same defense.
They have player – like they – I could see their defensive line and their front seven taking over for one game, but they haven't really done it week after week. I'm curious to see how, like, one of the great rookie classes in NFL history shows up in this playoffs. I mean, we're going to get the offensive rookie of the year, most likely Kamara. We're definitely getting defensive rookie of the year. And then Ryan Ramczyk, their right tackle, has been their best offensive lineman probably. Marcus Williams has played every snap, had a couple picks. I mean, he's played really well. It's like one of the best rookie classes we've ever seen.
What do you guys think of this game? Who's going to win?
I think it's going to be close. I'm going to go Saints 23, Panthers 20 in overtime.
Oh, a little OT magic. Wes?
I think Cam Newton has to carry too much of the load for this team right now, and I don't trust him. I don't trust the MVP version to show up. Mm. The Saints have been a better team in both games these two teams have played. I'm going to go Saints 27, Panthers let's say 20.
I want to pick one upset.
We keep picking the home teams.
I know, but there's a reason why, by the way.
So we're going, what, 12, 16 for six? We all picked all favorites all the round.
You know,
that's fine.
If the desert people feel the same way, too. I mean, it's like that type of round. Chances are one of these teams are going to blow it. And I think the Saints probably will be that team if MVP Cam shows up, but I'm not banking on it. So I think we'll be 31-23. Saints roll.
I think the Saints will win a close game, 27-24, something like that. I don't feel great about how they've looked going into the playoffs, and I like Cam's chances of kind of coming out, and maybe it's on the ground, but doing something in the big spotlight.
All right. There you go. The wild card round preview. The next time you hear from us will be Sunday night. We'll be all over the country. Two of the four stadiums. That's saucy. I can't say that enough. I love that. Watching the team of ATL, the Saints, but it will be...
We should root for a Saints-Rams NFC Championship game so we can go back to the Coliseum for the NFC Championship. Rams
Ooh,
hosting
all four
that
of
game.
Us. I like that.
There's a good chance of that happening.
And I am warning you. I am warning you, football gods. If you damn send the Bills to damn Foxborough next week, I will end you.
Well, you have their ear.
I thought you were going
to. They listen to your every command, so that should go over fine.
Gonna I don't say you know, no injuries to major players, but no, it was self-interest there.
And no disrespect, no disrespect to you Bills fans, because I know I was on your side last week. It's just I'm thinking a bigger picture, football fan thing.
I don't get the logic on this one. If your imagination can conceive of gods, wouldn't those gods be powerful enough to shut down whatever threat you have against them?
A lot of that checks out, Wes, but I'm just expressing my thoughts and using the football gods as kind of the vehicle. We'll have a little fun on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, and before we go, Mark, do you have a big question you want to ask?
I'll ask it to you after the show, Greg. It's going to be big.
Do you want to die? Erica, where were you in January 2000?
Second grade.
Oh, that's adorable.
I just buried my time capsule for the millennium, and I came home, and my mom was like, so what do you, like, what's about society? What do you want to put in there? And I was like, oh, I have this shark tooth that I got in Florida. She was like, what? And that's what I buried.
You sacrificed it?
It was like in a little jar, like I got it as a trinket. Like,
take my Zolak jersey, Mom.
Yeah.
Were you a promising student or the opposite?
No, I was great.
According to who?
Records.
Okay. Records.
Google.
Well, it sounds like it was the first time you disappointed your mom, perhaps.
But no, definitely not the first.
Oh, not the
she
first.
Was like a shark, too.
When do you open the time capsule?
It's still underground.
Time capsules, I am out. Come
Those
back,
things never get opened.
Come back to his time capsule, because anytime you try to go get it.
You can't find it.
It's and plus they're not sealed properly, so time ravages it, and it's all worm feed.
But imagine you're digging in the future, and you're like, "Oh my God, this was buried in 2000. You know, the millennium. Let's see what society was like back then." Right. Here
shark
is
tooth.
A
yeah,
shark
I remember
tooth.
A lot of shark tooth back then.
It's a megalodon.
A shark tooth.
I don't know.
That's a very second grade interest. I get that.
Yeah. All right.
Legendary.
Erica. JT, 1 month from today.
His single comes out tonight, and I heard a little rumor that Beyonce's on it.
Okay. And I still believe Janet will be at the Super Bowl. But
oh, I hope so.
All right. We've really got a lot of time before then. This is the Crucible. Let's get out of here. Dan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, the loose cannon behind the glass. Oh, yeah, baby. Playoff football. Let's fly. Till Sunday. On the nose. Are you doing like a club remix banger? DJ Marshmallow back there.
Well, Marvin Lewis is an idiot.
The Crucible!
Hey, it's starting to go somewhere. What's your favorite type of frog? Shark tooth.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.